Julian Parker on the 3-minute limit?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't put my boss on the 3-minute limit. Ready? Okay. Good evening. I should be on.
Usually supposed to be tomorrow.
There we go. Good evening and welcome to the November 21st, 2006 San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees meeting. The board met in closed session and we just had a conference with our real property negotiator about property at 190 San Antonio Street, Avila Beach, California. Pending litigation, San Luis Coastal Unified School District versus J.H. Edwards Company, R.E. Sunnyside Tenancy. And then we discussed negotiations with the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. Do we have a consensus on the order of business?
Yes.
Okay. Then we'll move right into our action, which is approval of the minutes. Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes of November 7th and November 13th?
I make a motion to approve
them. Mr. Spadafore has made a motion to approve the minutes of both November 7th and November 13th, seconded by Mr. Peter. And I have a correction to make on the November 13th. Minutes, and it said that Mr. Unger, president of the Board of Education, called the meeting to order, and I was not at that meeting, so I'm not sure who was the acting president, Mr. Spadafore. So, Mr., we could see that as a correction, please. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. Moving right along, we have a presentation this evening. Dr. Julian Crocker, County Superintendent of Schools. Dr. Crocker, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here this evening. This is kind of my annual visit to the board to talk with you just a bit concerning the County Office of Education, and also to receive any comments that you may want to give in terms of the County Office. You have two pieces of information, neither of which is brand new to you, but just to remind you, you have our annual report that covers all districts in the county. This, as you know, comes out usually in February of each year, so this is last year's report. This evening. One is, again, just to kind of bring you up to date in terms of the County Office of Education, and also, as I said, to receive any comments that you may have or questions of me at this time. Just to remind you that I generally like to think of the functions of the County Office in three ways. One, they're the obvious mandated functions that we have, such as the fiscal oversight function, fingerprinting function, a service to small school districts, and a number of other kind of lesser known parts of the Ed Code that we are required by code to do. You know that our fiscal oversight responsibility has been somewhat expanded over the last few years. A second area of things that we choose to do, I generally classify in the area of kind of response to need. And it may be a little different way of looking at it, but essentially, that's where a lot of the contact we have with districts come in this way. For example, our service to moderate and severely handicapped youngsters in our special education program, service to youngsters in the alternative education program through Court and Community School, for example, as well as our educational services division, which doesn't work directly with students, but works with adults who work with students. And all of those types of programs, we simply respond to needs that districts bring to us. All of the students, as you know, in the special education program belong to districts, or in the alternative ed program are still district students. For efficiency reasons, districts have decided to ask the County Office of Education to provide services for those. So there's a whole realm of services we provide in that way. And then the third area is a bit more of choice, if you will, on our part about what we decide to do. For example, direct services through the outdoor education program at Rancho El Churro. There's no mandate to do that. Districts take advantage of that, but they don't necessarily ask us to do that. A lot of districts outside of our county actually use that program. State preschool is another example. And also under that area is the whole idea of advocacy. And just a minute or two about that, since a lot that we do in schools, as you well know, involves the community, and in this county, a lot of community activities are countywide. And since there are 10 school districts in the county, it tends to make sense on countywide efforts to have the County Office of Education sort of represent public education in a general sense. Just one case in point, for an example, there's a current relationship. Frankly, it exists throughout our county, and hopefully it's the same for you, but certainly from the county office perspective, working with Ed and members of his staff, it's been a very, very mutually beneficial arrangement, certainly from our perspective. Speaking of that, the last thing I wanted to say is somewhat of a new initiative. You've probably heard of it. I'm very interested over the last 12 months or so in something called a P16 Council for the county, P being preschool, 16 all the way through four-year colleges and universities. And our state superintendent has formed a P16 Council on a statewide basis, and various counties are in various stages of kind of doing that. And the purpose of it is to draw together at least the formal educational entities within a county or region to try to coordinate our services a bit better and focus resources on mutually agreed upon initiatives or things that we would like to do. Now, for example, in this county, that would involve the preschool community, the K-12 schools, Cuesta, and Cal Poly. We're very lucky here, I think, because in some ways we have a fairly contained group to work on a P16. Other counties, Riverside, San Bernardino, Alameda, number of community colleges, several CSUs, UCs, it's a little different challenge for them. So our P16 council is countywide. That's the boundary. Ed is on the council representing, chosen by his colleagues and myself. We serve on the P16 council representing the K-12 arrangement. We have the president at Cuesta College, a member of her staff is here. The provost at Cal Poly is on the council. Members from the business community, we have Tommy Cata representing kind of the agricultural community from the South County. Who else am I missing on here? PG&E is represented. Yeah, Pat Mullen representing PG&E. And the idea is that you have the, if you will, the top decision makers and people of each of those institutions that, number one, can commit not only the resources of the institution, but also the initiative of those institutions toward issues that are countywide. So what are those issues? The one that we have chosen to be the first initiative is to provide universal preschool, quality universal preschool for all, hopefully, 3- and 4-year-olds, but we'll start with you. Are looking at the next one will be increase in students who choose what are called STEM, science, technology, education, technology, and in terms of their careers. This is, of course, of great interest and real expertise with Cal Poly being there. And that has a lot of ramifications in terms of more teachers qualified in math and science, particularly at the secondary level, training of teachers in the elementary and middle school level. So that whole area of math and science education, the second initiative. Third initiative is looking at the issue of English language learners. We all know that that's probably the key factor in terms of lack of student progress in our county, or youngsters that do not have a mastery of English. So that's the third area. And then the fourth one is looking at the dropout rate within our county. So those are four big initiatives. And our effort is really to try to say, with all the resources we have across the educational spectrum, can we, in a united way, try to deal with those issues? The one we're making the most progress on is the first one, is universal preschool. We have a task force operating now. Our initial effort is to develop a countywide plan for quality universal preschool. The effort with math and science is beginning now. Cal Poly, you know, has a Center for Science and Math Education, so they're involved with this. So I'm very excited about this. Over the next several years, hopefully, it'll be a way to better use the resources and efforts that we have countywide here. So thank you, and be glad to respond to any questions or comments that any of you may have.
Caroline.
Thank you. I just had one, and what you told us, I find that very interesting. The Grizzly Academy, since it initially it started, it was quite small, wasn't it? I see here on your on the newspaper that it's up to over 160 students.
Right.
And there is more and more enthusiasm for students attending this school. I saw an article in the paper, but the kids are actually petitioning to is they have to go through the court to get in there, or they have to go through their school district?
No, it's completely voluntary. Grizzly is not like a community school. Most of the students there, many of those students at community school are actually probation referred. Students at the Grizzly Charter School, that's one of the requirements, is that they have to volunteer to be there. Now, frankly, some of their parents volunteer them, but it is a volunteer program. It's very
hard. Who do they volunteer?
So when they apply, they actually are applying to the California National Guard. About 20% with each of the cohorts comes from this county. 80% are outside the county. And you're right, it has doubled its enrollment. I think this is the second cohort. We started with about 100 youngsters. We now aim for about 200, end up with about 150, 175.
Thank you.
It's a 22-week program, two 22-week programs.
And did it not just win a prestigious national award?
Right. Thank you for mentioning that. Right. It was selected as the very best challenge program nationwide out of about, I think, about 40 programs nationwide, a number of states. And so the one right here was selected as the best nationwide. And, in fact, this morning at 9 o'clock, the Board of Supervisors gave us a resolution of appreciation because of that, as a matter of fact. Yeah. It's a very good program. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr.
See you next
Crocker.
Year.
Thank you. Okay. And next, we have a presentation to Morro Bay High School graduate Ryan Duclos, who is a national FFA champion. And so, let's see who's going to be presenting that. This will be presented by Dr. Valentine.
Well, I'm just so pleased to have an opportunity tonight to honor Ryan and to honor another Morro Bay High School student who also received recognition, Taryn Green. And we know we sent Ryan off to Indianapolis as a national finalist some weeks ago, and Ryan spoke to us at that time, and he comes back now as the national champion, and I'm pleased to offer some time to Ryan and Linda Todd, teacher of both of the students here, and to Taryn to share a little bit about that experience.
Good evening, everybody. I'm going to make it short and sweet because I'm going to let the kids talk to you about their trip and what they did and the awards that they received. But I just can't tell you how proud everybody at Morro Bay and me and their parents and everybody and Ryan's parents' mother is here this evening at this award. He's the first to be a national winner from this area in this proficiency degree that he received.
Receive this award every year. 3,055 won it this year, and it's the highest degree in the FFA that you can achieve. You can't apply for it until you are out of high school for at least 1 year, and you have to have $7,500 earned or invested and 1,500 hours to your project. My project was riding horses. I've ridden since I was little, and the reason why I'm not in my uniform tonight, like Ryan is because as soon as you receive this award, you're considered out of the FFA, and you're considered an alumni. So I shouldn't be wearing my uniform tonight, and that's why I'm not. I brought, just to show you, this is the award that I received, and they give you a key as well that you wear on a gold chain on the side of your uniform. So thank you guys very much for your support. And this is Ryan.
Once again, my name is Ryan Duclos, and I am a graduate of Morro Bay High School. I recently returned from Indianapolis, October 29th. I think I got back into San Luis. And came back, had my whole family there. greeting me at the airport. It was a pretty amazing experience. I was named the national winner for the Proficiency Award Small Animal Production and Care. I received one plaque for being a national finalist that has my name on it. And then I received another plaque for being a national winner. Along with the two plaques, I won $1,000 and a 10-day trip to Costa Rica. I will be attending or going to Costa Rica June 20th through the 30th. And I will fly out of Miami, Florida. I will spend 10 days in Costa Rica traveling, learning about the agriculture in Costa Rica. I'll stay with the host family for two nights and just have a whole enjoy the whole culture of Costa Rica and everything. And just the most amazing experience of my life. And I don't think I could ever just have the feelings that I did after that day of being named a national winner. Are there any questions about our trip or anything? Or?
Well, I just think on behalf of the Board of Education, to both of you, we're so proud of you and we're so proud of your achievements. Again, I've said it before and I'm going to say it again. I think that a lot of people don't realize how important agriculture is to this county and how important agriculture programs are to San Luis Coastal Unified School District. And both of you personify that and just really are examples of the students that we know are in our schools. And
so it didn't go with his proficiency. That was another one that he did. And it was pretty amazing when we were on stage. If any of you ever get RFD TV, it was broadcast live and it'll be rebroadcast all the sessions starting in January, and we were the eighth session, I believe. But when we came off stage and he gave me a big old hug, I have never felt anybody shaking with happiness so much. Thank you for all the support from all of the board members also.
And Mrs. Todd, I just think that we need to recognize the hard work that you and all the teachers at both Morro Bay and San Luis High School put in. And just I know that the achievements of our students are really things that they've done for themselves, but they couldn't do it without you. And so thank you very much, and thanks for being behind these guys.
Thank you.
One more thing. Ms. Todd did have a slideshow prepared for this, but without necessary equipment. There was a little miscommunication between everything. But she was wondering, any of you that want that emailed to you, she can go ahead and do that. She'll go ahead and send that email to all of you.
Yeah, one of the easiest things, if you can send it to us through our board email, or if you'd like, you can send it to Mrs. Holmes and she'll see that we get it. That'd be great. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, let's move on to public comment. Actually, correspondence, the board has received no correspondence at this time. Public comment, if you had filled out a yellow form, great. Otherwise, please feel free to come up and address the board and state your name, and you can have 3 minutes to speak to us.
Okay. Hi, I'm Bob Shanbrom. I have two children in school. First, I want to say that I'm very thankful for the high quality of education that our two children have been enjoying in the San Luis Coastal School District. And it's been a joy for the whole family. We've met some exceptional educators, many far past our highest expectations. And thank you, board members, because you show how good government can be. And I appreciate that very much, because being in school is the most intimate interaction that a citizen has with its government, with their government. But I'm here tonight to voice concern over the imbalance and exclusivity and religious bias in the Everyday Etudes program. First, I wish to thank the people who helped put it together and say it really is a fantastic program, except for the issues I'm bringing up here tonight. I think everyone can benefit from starting their day. Etudes includes identifiably Christian sacred music, and it must, in the spirit of inclusiveness, balance, and impartiality toward other faiths, include their sacred music. We do not have a state religion, and we must not implicitly establish one. Secondly, for 5 years running, that's how long the program runs, the Everyday Etudes play exclusively music by male European Christocentric culture. What sort of message does this send to girls, to non-Christians, to children of color? There's a lot of incidental learning going on when things aren't quite balanced. And I think that is a side impact that needs to be addressed. So what I ask of you tonight is, first, to expand the everyday etudes to include sacred music of other religions and to present it as co-equal with Western sacred music. And that's a very tall order because our society is biased toward our cultural heritage. If that can't be done in a balanced way, then I think it needs to be, the sacred music needs to be removed altogether. Second, I think it should include music of other cultures, particularly African, which is arguably the dominant force in modern music. Third, with winter recess coming, I would especially ask that the district be sensitive to the diversity of our country and the feeling of non-Christian children and families, and play the winter selections wisely provided rather than the Christmas music, Christmas carols, that are optionally to be played next week. I would like to warn not only of the implicit establishment of state religion, as in the everyday etudes, as much as, but also about how the pilgrims worried of the explicit establishment of state religion in Henry VIII's time, which drove them here to this country. But furthermore, to the explicit establishment of state religion in the time of Jesus, and he worried about that in the time of the Pharisees. Finally, in the true spirit of peace on earth, why not try something new in the spirit of this season for many people? Why don't we try honoring each and every individual's belief system rather than trying to inculcate our own in each other? Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Bob. Typically, we don't engage during public comment. I'm going to break that.
Lori Brummett. And she said she thought it was a fine idea to intersperse music of other cultures. Unfortunately, the reason they hadn't done it was that that was not her husband's expertise. His expertise is Western music.
So you have gone through. All right. Is there going to be any other contact with her? Is that the end of it as far as the etudes are concerned?
Well, what I'm asking the board to do is to either exclude sacred Christian music or to include sacred music from other cultures and other religions.
Mr. Millar?
Thank you, Mr. President. I had an opportunity to talk with Bob at length about this issue, and I want to commend him first for the spirit with which he raised this issue. What I gathered is it's not about eliminating a program. In fact, he was very emphatic that he thinks that the kids are benefiting from the program. For him, it was about a collaborative effort, and he's talked with quite a few of us here and the program's operators as well, and I applaud that. I do think that's what we need. He also has a very interesting perspective, and when he was telling me about the issue, it sort of startled me because I realized that, you know, I truck along as, with essentially a white male surrounded by other white males, particularly at my house, and you sort of lose this perspective. And I think he's right. I think what I would like is perhaps some information in the Friday packet on the program, and then maybe what the administration thinks might be a way to make it more inclusive yet preserve the benefit. I think that what struck me most from Bob's comments was he walked into his daughter's classroom in the morning and they were listening to the etudes and they were having a meditative, contemplative period of time to sort of settle in and get ready for the school day, and he felt that that was very beneficial. I agree with him. I'd like to preserve that and find a way to honor the other kinds of sacred music for our students, and I appreciate Bob bringing this issue forward. And if I could have support on the Friday packet request.
Okay. So we'll go forward on that, and we'll get some more information on that, and then we'll see if there's other discussion that the board wants to engage in. Thanks very much, Bob.
I want to call your attention. I'm sure that you read it on Monday's paper, Studies Find Little Progress in Closing the Test Gap, an interesting article, certainly worthy of all your attention. And what I want to do is kind of talk about how I think that the West Ed program that the teachers are currently experiencing, the in-service. I don't think this is a... I doubt the efficacy of the program. I've talked to many of my colleagues. I'm not going to represent their points of view, only my own personal one, which is that it seems to me that our textbooks and our late start days have been dedicated to achieving a common calendar and common assessments. And this is something that we've worked on our own, and I think we are addressing the state standards. I think we have been. I understand the need to lift the scores of certain subgroups. However, I feel that this particular program, which is aimed at taking the state test and dismantling it and looking at the various items and then creating benchmark tests based on selected state standards, I think this has the effect of twisting our curriculum, changing our schedules, and I really doubt that taking selections out of a 4 to 5 inch binder of test questions, which are not taken from the selections that the students read on a daily basis or weekly basis, really is going to have a negligible effect. And I think for the time and the money that we put in, I think that time and money could be better spent on the teachers looking at their common calendar and their common assessments and working together on that. So I just want to make sure that the board understands. I think the district administration understands my position, but that there's more than just several voices out there that have some very strong feelings about this. And I just want to raise mine as one of the voices that doubts the, like I said, the effectiveness of this program. Thank you.
Great. Thanks very much, Jim. Okay, thank you.
It has to do with academic freedom because I do think it tends to make curriculum lockstep. And I think it has an effect on the individual teacher's creativity.
Great, thank you very much. And again, I apologize for not recognizing you for public comment before. Anybody else want to speak? Okay, let's go move forward on reports by school staff and student representatives. First, are there any school staff that would like to make a report? Mr. Nicholson.
Good evening. Hi, I'm Don Nicholson, the principal of Bishop's Peak Teach Elementary School, and I'm here this evening to share some more good news with you about our schools. Last Thursday evening, Dr. Valentine, sixth grade teacher Esther Pudlow, and I drove to Los Angeles for an award dinner and a program presented by the California Business for Education Excellence Foundation and the Just for Kids California group. The California Business for Education Excellence Foundation is an organization that believes high academic achievement is happening across all ethnic and socioeconomic lines in every corner of our state. They seek to connect low-performing schools with high-performing schools with similar student populations in an organized way to help all schools in California get 100% of their students to grade level by the 2013-2014 school year as required by federal law. Just for the Kids California is a nonprofit organization that provides an online data and school improvement system. It promotes improved academic achievement in schools through focused use of achievement data, research, and effective school improvement strategies from across the state and nation. Some of the businesses and organizations that are involved in this include groups such as AT&T, Bank of America, the Hellman Family, Enterprise Rent-A-Car, Macy's, State Farm Insurance, the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Washington Mutual, Webcorp Builders, Intel, IBM, Hewlett-Packard, Boeing, and others. 2006 is the second year that these two groups have joined together to name schools to their joint honor roll. Using data, these groups identify and honored the highest performing public schools in California. No other school recognition program in California is in achievement gaps among all their students. The honor roll is made up of two different awards, Star Awards and Scholar Awards. The Star Schools, there are 100 of those, are those schools who have shown a significant increase in grade level proficiency and serving, even though they may serve some challenging populations, low socioeconomic and so forth. They may not have achieved high levels of standards just yet, but they have shown significant growth consistently over a four-year period in all of their subgroups. The second group is the group of scholar schools. There are 204 schools in that group this year, and those are schools that have shown consistently significant high academic achievement. And I'm pleased to tell you that Charles E. Teach School has been named a scholar school for the second year in a row. How about this group? And with that organization, we were presented with certificates and another nice banner to be able to. So it was another nice award for our schools, and I just wanted you all to know about that.
Thank you. Congratulations, and thanks for sharing that, Don. That's great.
Thank you.
Other reports by school staff? Okay. Let's move on to student representatives to the board, and we have one student representative here, Yoni Moskowitz from Morro Bay High School.
Well, thank you for recognizing me. I'm glad to see that the world keeps turning even when I'm not here for a month and a half. So let's begin. Sorry I wasn't able to make it last time. You may have heard I was volunteering at a polling precinct in Morro Bay, 214. So it was exciting, and I'll tell you about it afterwards if you come up to me and we speak about it. Morro Bay is proud to have Mr. Schofield and Mr. Zotovich back from Washington, D.C., where they received our National Blue Ribbon Award. Here's our little fuzzy in the background plaque. I'll pass it around. You guys can look at it. And, oh, yeah, there's cameras all over. I guess they'll find it. Here's our flag. And we're upside down. But we also have a banner kind of thing, so congratulations. Nationally recognized Blue Ribbon School 2006. That's our flag, and we hang it from our flagpoles every day, and we took it down just to show you guys. Packet will play a teacher's team during the assembly, and I'm taking it upon myself to put out some fielders for a school board team. If you guys want to talk to me.
Did you say dodgeball?
Dodgeball tournament. So if you guys want to talk to me afterwards, we can work it out.
I became a senior citizen today. I don't know that I can do this stuff anymore.
Really? Is it your birthday? Okay. Our winter sports include wrestling, girls water polo, boys and girls basketball, and boys and girls soccer. Although we are excited about our winter sports, our fall sports are also just coming to a close. Girls tennis went to the CIF quarterfinals in their division. Our football team just won their first game in CIF 40-14, and now has to play Oaks Christian, who are very, very good, but we're excited. Our boys' cross-country team plays third in CIF, and our girls play seventh. Both teams will now compete in the state meet, and we're having our fall sports award banquet on December 4th. Our artistic students are performing soon and would love to see some of our school board support. The Pirates are putting on a play the 7th, 8th, and 9th of December, and our band is performing at the Slow Christmas Parade on the 9th and having a concert on the 11th. The choir is also having a concert on December 14th, and we'd love you guys all to show up and support the arts. The Peer Helping Food Drive is happening now, and the ASB will also be putting on a Toys for Tots drive coming soon after that ends, because we don't want to put too much giving on the table for their student body to comprehend. I trust you all got the copies of the new Spyglass in the mail. Great. And we're also having a financial aid night for juniors and seniors who are interested on December 5th. And just today, our ASB attended a leadership conference at Napomo High School. We were introduced to members of other leadership classes, and we brainstormed ideas to help get the student body more involved and interested. That's all, and see you guys next time.
Thank you very much, Yoni. Well, wait, Mrs. Roger has a question for you.
Yes. Yoni, you mentioned that you'll be having an assembly to recognize your national blue ribbon status and also welcome your new vice principal. Do you know when yet? Has that been scheduled?
We have not scheduled the assembly. Are you asking when Mr. Andres is scheduled to take the position or when the
assembly is happening?
Before winter break. It is before winter break. That just came on the schedule this week, and we should be hashing out the details pretty soon.
Okay, so maybe Mr. Zotovich then would let us know when you do determine the date and time if we want.
Thank you. Pete Zotovich, principal of Morro Bay High School. We are planning, we will know in the next few days, early next week, when our assembly is going to be. We're looking at timing of hanging the flag and announcing, and the students know, but to actually have a formal presentation. Mr. Schofield and I left pretty early on Wednesday morning, and we got there, absolute dismal weather Wednesday evening in Washington, D.C. Woke up to the most glorious 3 days you've ever seen in your life. Just beautiful, in the mid-70s, shirt-sleeve weather, and it was that way till 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night. On Thursday was the first event. We did our registration, started around 12, and we went to several sessions where they had certain of the blue ribbon schools presenting, and they had one session for high school, they had two sessions for middle school, and they had six sessions for elementary. Overall, there were 292 blue ribbon schools represented. Only 36 of those were public high schools, of which 12 of those were in the state of California. And as we know, in California, it rotates every other year, but in the rest of the nation, in some cases, it's every year. So we were in a very, very select group. It was really interesting to talk to the different people that we did. That went till about 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Then we had a dinner break, and we came back. And we were taken for a tour of Washington, D.C. by bus, which was absolutely fabulous. And on that particular night, we ended up about 9 o'clock at the Lincoln Memorial, which was just unbelievable. To turn around, and I came out from the Lincoln Memorial, Mr. Schofield was sitting down with his wife looking at the beautiful background of the Capitol and the Washington Monument to see a beautiful, almost full moon coming up. And we're sitting there looking at this, and it just brings tears to your eyes. And it's shirt-sleeve weather, just gorgeous. Hundreds of people being there. And the next day, they had breakfast for us. They had some more sessions that we had to go to. We got to listen to the National Teacher of the Year, which was an elementary teacher from Baltimore, and just absolutely fabulous. We went to another session that they spoke to us about grant writing and awards. And then we listened to the association presidents for elementary, middle school, and high school principals. And then we got to have a question and answer period with them. And then they had a formal lunch, and then right after that they had the presentation. So we really appreciate what we're doing, and it was quite a invigorating experience. So we really appreciate your support, and thank you. We had a great time, and thank you very much for allowing me to come up and speak to you for a moment.
Great, and thank you. Congratulations to you and everybody at Morro Bay High School. Okay, Mr. Miller, do you have anything to share with us about the state budget?
Sure. There has been the election has finally happened, and there's a lot of political posturing that's going to go on in the next couple of weeks. And as committees get filled up, districts will have great interest in how those committees are headed up and who's in charge. Very recently, I think it was last Friday or Thursday, Alan Burson, the California Secretary of Education, resigned his post, and the replacement of his position, the replacement for his position, will be of great interest to school districts also. In the process of discussions with the CASBO Ledge Committee and other statewide bodies, there have been some issues that have come to the forefront that education is going to be extremely interested in this year in the legislative process, not the least of which will be the STRS rate increase. STRS is an underfunded retirement program, and part of the solution for that is to increase rates to the rate payers. And right now, Employees pay 8% of their earnings into STRS. The employers, districts, pay 8.5%, and the state of California pays 2%. And the proposal is for employee to go to 8.5% to 9%, for the districts to go from 12.5% to 13.5%, and for the state to go to about 3%. And they feel that rate will enable them to collect enough money to make their program credible and viable into the future. That is of great interest, obviously, to districts, because the percentage increase of 5% will represent hundreds of thousands of dollars just in our budget, millions of dollars statewide, obviously. There was also an error made by the Department of Education in its school meal reimbursement. Originally, legislature passed in the budget an increase of 7 cents per meal, and we were funded for that. But ultimately, the governor, on the last day of his ability to do, there is a there's bills and clarity coming out about charter school oversight. We will watch those carefully because of the obvious issues it has to our contract, and we will be concerned about how those bills are worded and the outcomes for that particular idea. Interesting happenings with SB 1133. The 1133 is the bill that was negotiated between the governor, CTA, and Jack O'Connell, Department of Education, about the funds that Schwarzenegger took from us as school districts. So it was billions of dollars. And the payback of those funds by the state is characterized in programs designed to enhance the decile 1 and 2 schools' learning. And the problem with it is that it is a class size issue. The educational programs are designed around reducing the class size of 4, 5, and 6 in the decile 1 and 2 schools. Those require facilities. And the funding of the SB 1133 to qualified schools doesn't require a program for the first 2 years, so your funding can be used to enhance your facilities, but it does require at the end of the third year that you show measurable progress in your student achievements. And the thinking is, and if you don't, you have substantial penalties, both in terms of personnel and in terms of financial penalties. And if you don't make that progress, and many districts don't believe that they can show significant progress in just 1 year to the level of which is required by SB 1133, they're not going to take the funding. And there's a lot of conversation out there right now about whether this funding will ever be pushed forward into the program that it was designed for, and we're going to watch that carefully because ultimately it could take a recharacterization of all of the whole program. And then there's the issue of declining enrollment statewide and what that means not only to state funding but to individual school districts. Right now, some revenue limit districts, all revenue limit districts, are protected to the degree that they get funding at a minimum of the previous year's enrollment. So as they are declining, their revenues will remain stable for 1 year, and it's a step-down process. But it has different manifestations as it continues to different programs, special ed, categorical, in the last month and a half of mandated costs, going back as far as 1996 and going forward. The problem with it is that there is going to be a strenuous audit process attached to those dollars. And for 3 years, the state has the right to come in, audit our processes of claiming those reimbursements and asking for reimbursements for those items that they find not to be documented properly. The problem with their audit process is that they are inventing, they're establishing the process after the fact. They've told us to do it one way, but they're coming in and auditing it from a different viewpoint. And 80% of all of the audits conducted, they are finding deficiencies on 80% of the dollars. So they're requiring reimbursements. What we're going to do is we're going to place our $1.5, $1.6 million in reserve for 3 years until the audit process finishes. It also is a broken process. The state doesn't want to pay us this money. The controller's office doesn't want to pay us this money, but we're mandated by law to perform these functions. So we're going to be required to do these functions and not receive reimbursement for it. It's going to become a burden on school districts. And what we want to see as a school district is a streamlining of the process and a redefinition of what's required and what's not, and what we're going to be reimbursed for and what we're not going to be reimbursed for. So if they're going to require us to do different medical procedures that we then have some sort of a cost attached to it, we want to make sure we get those dollars. If not, then as a local district, we would have that choice to do it or not. And if we wanted to invest our funds in it, we could or not. But the mandate cost reimbursement program is fairly much of a broken program at this point, mainly because they're refusing to pay us dollars that's mandated by the state constitution. But they recognize that, to their credit, and they paid us. Our problem is, can we keep those dollars under the audit processes they're going to impose on us? So that's a summary of what's going on in Sacramento. It's going to be an interesting year. It's not a bad year. It's a good year. There's going to be money. COLA is going to be 3.5%. There's going to be enough to cover the Prop 98 funding. There's probably not going to be deficits. From the process point of view and about finances, we're in pretty good shape. It's the other interesting details that are going to be watched carefully throughout the year. The attendance of each individual so that their salary for that particular day can be reimbursed in the mandate process. What we've done is we've passed a sign-up sheet around and everybody signs their name and says, I was here. What the state, and the state in many instances for the past 15 years has accepted that in an audit process as acceptable. Now they're requiring not just the sign-up sheet, but copies of the individual's calendar showing that they had calendared that activity for that day at that time. So they're asking for dual proofs of the verification that the attendance occurred. And that's just one example of a multitude of different rules that they've changed and past practices without notification that have changed.
Boy, remember the old days when he said he didn't have anything to report from Sacramento? Let's take the most recent thing we're discussing.
Ed's been kicking me under the table, but other than that, I'm okay.
Thanks, Ed. Keep kicking him. On the mandated cost, the 80% reference, 80% of the dollars had some audit issue. That wasn't specific to us, was it?
Not to us. This is statewide so far. Since they initiated the audit process, they've audited rather large districts. Okay. And out of those large districts, with the type of documentation that I understand we also have, the state is finding deficiencies equal to 80% of the dollars, some cases 100% of the dollars.
Wow.
Clovis Unified is an example that lost $28 million on a mandate to keep track of interdistrict transfers. And they neighbor Fresno, so you can imagine how many interdistrict transfers and the processes they have to go through. They are very good at documentation. They've proven that in the past. And they had 100% of their claim denied.
Wow. And I don't want to take too much time with it, but our system that we've been on where the individual employee reports to the person who's calculating this, is that going to be, are we creating source data that will be sufficient to satisfy this second proof that we were there?
We can only hope at this point. I'm about as cloudy as everybody else in terms of what the auditors would require. They're hiring college graduates with accounting backgrounds and no audit experience whatsoever. They're giving them a list of guidelines to follow, and then they're not allowing appeals. The process is onerous, and it still needs to have some. There's many lawsuits going on, by the way.
I bet.
So this,
could be cured right
in the courts more than it will be yours as a potential.
Okay. And I would like the record to reflect that Mr. Miller was correct in his prediction of the governor's race last
time. I was just going to say, since we have their lunch money in our bank, instead of giving it back, maybe we ought to invite some of these guys down to have lunch with us in some of our cafeterias. And
that would be good.
Show them what a well-run school is.
There you go.
And just there's no such thing as a free lunch. Is that the lesson to be learned here?
See what you started, Ed.
Right. Anything else from the state? Seeing none. Let's move on to item number 3, which is reappointment of personnel commissioner.
And this is an action discussion item. Mr. Robinette.
Yes, thank you. As you recall, several months ago, the board appointed a new commissioner to the Personnel Commission to take John Spadafore's place, who joined the board. Jerry Ambrose was selected to be the commissioner for the Personnel Commission. His term actually expires because it's really the end of Mr. Spadafore's term, so that expires in December. It is our recommendation that he be reappointed as opposed to going out and searching again for a three-year term. Mr. Ambrose has done an outstanding job serving the commission. It was an outstanding choice, and it would be our recommendation that he continue.
I move reappointment of Jerry Ambrose as the board's representative to the Personnel Commission.
It's been moved by Mr. Millar and seconded by Mr. Spadafore. Any discussion? Mrs. Botwin.
Yes, I've been to a number of the meetings, and I've seen Jerry in process from his first one to the last one. And Rick, you hit it on the nose. He's done an outstanding job, as they all have. But he's gotten right in there, and he's, with his own background, was able to really adapt to the process and make commitment to it. So we thank him very much for what he's done, and we thank him for continuing to do it.
Any other discussion? Can we go ahead and take a vote on that this evening? Okay. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. Let's move on then to the action consent agenda. Item number 4, approval of certificated and classified personnel items.
Cool.
Item number 5, approval of proposed hourly rate adjustment for student aides. Number 6, acceptance of donations. 7, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 8, approval of purchase orders. 9, approval of K-12 school improvement plans.
The approval of the certificated and classified personnel items for all the teachers and staff who are taking extra a club or a sport or another related yearbook director, things like that. And basically we have 80 assignments, and there are basically 63 people doing those 80 assignments, which means some of them are doing double time and one even triple time. And I think that for the most part, this is outside the teacher workday and all have to do with our students, and they deserve, even though they're getting a small, limited salary for what they're doing hourly, it doesn't work out to be very much at all. And they deserve our utmost gratitude for what they are doing and have done for our kids at our schools. So thank you from the board.
Would you like to make a motion, Mrs. Butler?
I move that we accept the approval of certificated and classified personnel items.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Mr. Peter. All in favor?
Aye.
Carries 6-0. Item number 6, Mrs. Botwin.
There's another item here particularly I wanted to note. We always make a fuss over everybody, as we should. Anybody who donates money deserves our utmost praise and hugs and, well, kisses maybe. The first one here, the first item on it, was the Los Ranchos Elementary School Parent Teacher Association donated over $3,000. Most of it going for etudes in the classroom program and a couple hundred dollars to cover cost of art supplies. And I just thought that was outstanding for the parent teacher. How they get together and get over $3,000 is beyond imagination. And the fact that they put it back in the classroom again is beyond imagination. So thanks to all of the other groups there that donated, but particularly to this particular PTA. And I move that we accept.
Okay, it's been moved by Mrs. Botwin and seconded by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Carries 6-0. All right, let's move on to item number 11, advanced agenda. Does anyone have anything for the advanced agenda items? Mrs. Botwin.
Chris, I'm not sure if it come here or not for the advanced agenda, but we do have the meeting, I think, was... Am I correct, Ed, that the meeting for December 5th is planned for Morro Bay High School?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. 4th, we have an expulsion hearing at Morro Bay also. So okay. It's that. Great. Thank you.
Any other advanced agenda items, Mr. Spadafore?
I wanted to ask the board
to consider one of the agenda items that's not yet scheduled, the anti-hazing language. And my suggestion would be, if there's any support for this, that after the first of the year, we discuss or we schedule an update on the tolerance study session that we had last year with the student involvement, so we can combine those two and then find out what the status is at the schools and with the student representatives regarding the issues that were raised at last year's study session regarding tolerance.
Is everybody from the board okay with that? Okay. Walter, is that something you'd support? Caroline?
Yes.
Okay, very good. So we'll move on that. Other things for the advanced agenda? Okay. Let's move on then to item number 12, reports by board members and administrators. First of all, are there any administrators who have reports for us? Dr. Valentine.
Just a heads up that we have no staff in the office tomorrow except perhaps me. So the next Friday update would be a week from Friday, and we will respond to the items requested tonight at that time.
Thank you. Okay. And if I have a couple of things. I don't know, Mr. Spatafore, do you have?
I'll follow you.
Okay. First of all, Dr. Crocker mentioned the P16 Council, and the reason I wasn't at the expulsion the other night was because I actually was at that P16 Council meeting, and I am working on the preschool cadre, as it were, trying to help develop the county plan for our preschools. So it's been an interesting experience, and it's interesting to look at the notion of preschool for all students in San Luis Obispo County. The group I'm with is looking at money and legislation, and at this point, there doesn't seem to be the money available to do that except in the lower decile schools. So it will be interesting to see how it all develops. I think a lot of folks were hoping that the Prop 82 money that Prop 82 would pass and that would fund preschool for all. So there will be some creativity in that. On Friday, I was able to go to the Tri-County Education Coalition, and the adequacy movement refers to a study that's actually being completed at this time, talking about what the actual cost of educating students is. This was something that was started several years ago, and the governor was supporting it. The governor had since pulled back his support. California School Boards Association had received a grant from the Hewlett Foundation to the tune of about $500,000 to go forward on this. We're working with other members of the Ed Coalition and the PTA to look at that. The adequacy should be. It should come forward about January after the election, coincidentally, and it may be a big deal because it may, for the first time, really give us some ideas about what it actually costs to educate kids, as opposed to what the state guesses that it should cost to educate kids. The hope is that. That it will put a floor under it, not a ceiling. And so we're really hopeful that we'll be able to actually put some numbers and some money toward that. The other thing that, and Russell alluded to this, is we found out last week that Alan Bearson, who was the Secretary of Education, resigned. I received it from the Director of Region 9, which is our California School Board Association region. And he went back to San Diego, and apparently what he's doing down in San Diego is he's going to be taking over the airport down in San Diego. The buzz from Mr. Plotkin was that he accompanied Governor Schwarzenegger to Mexico. They had a long talk about education, and the rumor has it that the governor was not willing to support some of the issues that Mr. Bearson felt were important for California, specifically education. One of the concerns also is that the governor's agenda for this year will not focus on education as much as on health and welfare and other things. Along with that, we have to be very careful about who is nominated for Secretary of Education. Now, granted, the Secretary of Education job is, in a sense, a figurehead job. However, the person does talk to the governor, and in some ways, this person does charter schools. In fact, the words that are given to her are all charters all the time. The governor really seems to be looking at charter schools, and I would say, according to Scott, most of the governor's public pronouncements about schools have been at charter schools, I think probably with the exception of Sensheimer here in San Luis Obispo. The concern we have is that the governor will be making a strong push to charter schools this year. One thing that I would like the board to consider is making a recommendation to the governor, our Assemblyman Sam Blakesley, our State Senator Abel Maldonado, and anybody else that will listen, that we, and I'm going to make this specific recommendation, I would like to see our board recommend Senator Bruce McPherson, current Secretary of State of California, to be moved toward being Secretary of Education. I'd point out that Mr. McPherson has been a strong supporter of schools in the Central Coast. He's been a good friend to us. He helped us when things looked grim for us with the takeaway of our community-supported tax funds. He has a strong interest in education. So I would like, with the board's approval, to ask the superintendent to write a letter to our local legislators and to the governor and to Secretary McPherson, supporting the notion that Secretary McPherson would be an excellent Secretary of Education. And with the board's permission, I would like to ask Dr. Valentine to do that on our behalf. I'm asking it now, not as a resolution, because I think we need to jump on this right away.
Isn't this an action item? I mean, are we taking action on something?
I don't know. Is it an action item if I'm asking a letter to be written as opposed to
consensus?
I don't know. Somebody help me out here, because if it is an action item, then it's not on the agenda. And can somebody help me?
It has some elements of action necessary for it, because you're acting as a group to make a recommendation, and so as a group, you would direct the superintendent to write this letter of support that you're asking for. I think that you can make your statement of interest, and individuals then could be free to choose whether they would write their letter of support or not, and you stated your case very well. I think that might be a better way to approach this, or bring it back as an action item in the near future.
Our usual policy?
Not wait until at least the 4th, which we could put it on an action. We could put it on the agenda at the special meeting of the 4th. My concern is that the governor might move forward before that, and I'd like to get us on record. So perhaps something coming from you stating that the board discussed this, and I don't know.
I just wanted to add something. Well, I was going to second what Russell is saying. I think if the letter comes from the board, then it's a board's, each in board's member's individual contribution to a letter. It's not directing the district to send a letter for the district. I think that may be an action item that has to be here for discussion. Okay. If you're asking the district to do it under the superintendent's signature. But I think if the board's willing to sign a letter in support of what you're saying, then it doesn't necessarily need to come from the school district.
May I jump in here? I have two concerns. One is, should we be doing this? Two is, if we're going to do it, should we be considering other candidates for a recommendation besides Bruce McPherson, who I admit is a nice man and has done good things? So I'm bothered by this coming up on the rump of the meeting, as it were. And it smacks of action to me. If it smells like action, sounds like action, and talks like action, it's probably action.
Okay. Would the recommendation be that board members then, if they feel this way, would write individual letters?
That wouldn't require any action. That would just be an act of conscience. But do you want it agendized on the 4th? And does the board want it agendized on the 4th?
Okay. Could we put it on the agenda of the 4th as a short item?
If that meets your time urgency piece.
Fourth or the fifth?
Well, there's one on the 4th for an expulsion and one on the 5th.
I probably the 5th would be better. And the only caveat to that would be if the governor's already made the nomination, then it probably doesn't make any difference.
So there are two routes. One is you could all write one tomorrow.
Right.
And the other is to wait until the 5th and see if there's a board action to write such a thing.
Or do both.
That's true. You could do both.
Thank you for pulling me back to the straight and narrow.
I'm hearing December 5th, by the way.
Okay. Thank you. I wanted to make mention of a February we're going to have a discussion on the funding, potential funding planning for visual arts, music, PE, and on December 5th, we're going to discuss further academic freedom. And I believe that there's a connection between the arts, the music, the curriculum, academic freedom or portions of it, and what's happening in the state towards development of curriculum to bring into sequential standards-based instruction in the classroom K through 12. So I'm asking that the board look at the agendized item coming up for the issue of the, what was I just saying about that, the academic freedom, and then the January or February discussion on the arts and the music with an eye towards this conference that's happening in May so we can contribute and have developed some ideas on our own. Because I think your comment about the charter school and the fact that next year there's already an anticipated $3 to $5 billion shortfall in the state budget. The utilization of funds that may be here this year in correlation with the programs that can be initiated are going to tie in with what's happening with the state. So I bring that up to try and connect some of these dots as we move forward on those items.
A couple of things, all small. Kim, I want to thank you, and would you thank the janitor here for putting the tables in a way that we could see everybody else and you guys could see, not that you'd want to, but anyway.
The left wing of the park.
The tables were marvelous tonight, the most comfortable they've ever been. Also, I want to mention that I did call the ROP and told them I will, while you guys are whooping it up in San Francisco, I'm going to be going to the ROP meeting on the 29th of November, and I will bring that information back to the 5th. But she was very happy I was going to attend the meeting because she knew both of us had planned to go to the San Francisco, and she said, well, I'm sorry we're losing you, but at least we're getting one of you guys here to the meeting. I thought, well, that's very practical, very practical. My last item is that I called Ruth Cobb last week, and I was really surprised because she was embarrassed. I asked her where our 5% raise that we voted ourselves. I'd much rather have than a party where everybody, the person that's being partied always gets embarrassed and drinks too much and makes a fool out of themselves. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But anyway, no, it's my husband that actually embarrasses me. But I would rather sometime when you see you're going to have a short meeting like this or have a feeling there will be, give me a call and say where you're going to go afterward for drinks and let me come and join you. It would be much more relaxing, congenial, and then when any of us get mad at each other, we can just leave. You know, it's that kind of thing. But if you're the host, it's very hard. So thank you guys anyway, but I appreciate the offer.
Thank you.
I just have one quick item.
Sure.
Even though I've been threatened with some pretty serious injuries. Oh, I'm sorry, Marilyn. I jumped right in front of you. I am going to say nice things about Mrs. Botwin at the next meeting, and she can't stop me.
Very, very brief.
Mrs. Roger.
Okay, well, we're on track for a short meeting here, and I'm not going to hold us up too much. But I just did want to say that I had the opportunity yesterday. I created the opportunity for myself to spend the day. I chose Baywood School because it's my neighborhood school and where I'm comfortable. I spent part of the day in the upper grade SDC class and part of the day in a sixth grade classroom where we have a special education child being mainstreamed. And I called Ed at home last night because I was so excited about the experience that I had. I really loved being in the SDC class. I loved seeing the children working and learning and becoming aware of the different kinds of individuation that's going on, the various technological pieces of equipment that we have that our kids work with that I would, if I didn't go and observe there, I would have no idea that they existed. It was just a really good learning experience for me. And I didn't, in the regular ed classroom with the mainstream child, I didn't really have enough time to observe a lot of the academics that were going on because I happened to be in that class during library and the very exciting changing of the desk assignments and then reading aloud. But it's a great investment. Even if you can't spend the whole day, there's just so much to be learned, and it was a really an uplifting experience for me. I felt really good about our district and what we're doing after having that experience. Thank you.
And before we close, I did want to revise what I was saying. Although I'm passionate about Bruce McPherson, as I think about it, I think it might be more appropriate for the board to express the desirable characteristics for a Secretary of Education in a more generic form, and then individually, as we see fit, support specific candidates. But I think it is important that we send a message to the governor and to our legislators that we value public education, and that charter schools, although effective in some cases, are not the panacea that they're proclaimed to be. Mrs. Botwin?
Thank you. I forgot this, and I didn't want to bring this back to the next meeting. Remember, Walter and I had kind of laughed and gurgled a little about the strategic plan that we had worked on back in 2000 and 2001. Remember that? Okay. And I called Mary, and this is, you know, but there's all lots of bits and pieces in here. It doesn't take much time to go through, but I called Mary and I said, do we have a strategic plan? Because we had worked on it so assiduously for a year. It was, well, six, 7 months anyhow. And this was the action plan recommendations for 2000-2001, and it was presented to the strategic planning team March 23rd, 2000. And Mary said she couldn't find a strategic plan and or it was not where you were looking for that was done. Obviously, if this was presented to the strategic planning team March 23rd, 2000, then there had to be a strategic plan. And if there wasn't, I think we should call John Barnhart and raise a little holy hell that we spent all that time doing. Yeah, I remember it too. So I just wanted to mention to you guys, because this would be wonderful background for where we were, you know, where we are now and where we're going.
I will say that there was a strategic plan, and many of the things in here were accomplished. And what these were action plans that were reviewed, I think, on an annual basis to see where we were. We knew this system, and I much prefer Dr. Valentine.